honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 98-year-old Arthur Grabiner of New York City, a Navy veteran of World War II. Earlier, he shared that while growing up in the Big Apple before the war, a 20-block radius around his home constituted the entire world as he knew it. But I understand when you got to Dutch New Guinea aboard the USS Lawrence, you experienced a little bit of an epiphany or a revelation?
Revelation. Here I was standing on the beach and I was saying, my 20 around, and here I could see to be a ride 10 miles out with binoculars a little further. And in 10 days, my life expanded. We got mail, and everything was censored. I knew the rules. What am I going to joke around? I wrote, everything's fine. We couldn't tell them where we were or what we did. And that's it, one paragraph. He has a copy of my letter that I sent home. And that's it. 4 months later, I told him, you remember this and this? We were there. That's it. But no fooling around. We used to joke around with the Army. There were mail boys, would we say, out in the ocean, and they drop off the mail and we'll pick it up. And it was a big joke, you know, to pull their leg.
And is there anything I didn't ask you about life aboard ship that maybe stands out in your memory, things you experienced or the way things were?
Life aboard ship is great. You sit in long tables and you went for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. One day I go out, I'm on top deck, and I'm going to get something, and I bang into somebody. We look, turn around, and he's in the Army. He lives across the street from me. I gave him the royal treatment. I had him come into my office, sit around. I said, 3 meals, you come with me, you eat with the crew. Now then, we had to stand at the table. We couldn't sit, so they got more in. And that was for a week and a half that I was host. The movie, I took him upstairs with the crew and got home. His mother was a widow and she moved and he moved and never saw or heard about him again. He wrote home and told my parents and she was so grateful she went and bought something for my father.
So, you know, you mentioned that letter. And here I see it right here, 23 March 1945. Dear folks, time sure flies. On the 26th of this month, it'll be 5 months since we left the States. These 5 months sure have passed very fast. I'm getting along fine and hope that everything at home is getting along likewise. Nothing new has occurred lately that is of any importance. In this letter, I'm enclosing a bill from Dutch New Guinea. I got it at Wakdi Island in Dutch New Guinea. We were there about 2 months ago. You can add this to the collection of the Japanese money used in the Philippine Islands, which I sent you a while back. Don't let Papa retire on that Japanese money. He won't get too far. I guess this will be all for the present. Give my regards to all at home. And the interesting thing I note, and I emphasized them when I said it, all the locations you had in capital type, was that trying to emphasize a hint to them about something?
No, that's the normal thing. A name of a particular area and everything, a little emphasis. But I didn't tell them anything about the two invasions, the Japanese planes, kamikaze. No. Later on, we were permitted. They would have erased it or ripped up my mail. So why should I fool around? I knew the rules.
They would have taken a razor blade and cut those words out, huh?
Took a black marker and went right through it. You couldn't see it.
Well, something else. Now, right in front of you, at this moment are two Japanese flags that are, I guess, about 6 inches by 5 inches, something like that. What's the story there? Where did those come from?
The war was over, and we were island hopping, moving troops from one place to the next, and we hit one island that the Japanese occupied, and there was their warehouse with all things. And what did we do? We went in, we raided the place. We took blankets, and we took shoes and everything, and we took these flags and everything. Now, I want to, about these flags, the war is over. In order to get all of the guns out of the area, they gave us, each and every one of us, a rifle with a bayonet as a souvenir. And I spent, weeks with sandpaper on that thing to get it nice and smooth and everything. And we got a letter permitting us to take this. This is how we get rid of Japanese rifles. Well, I had it at home for about a couple of years, and I'm not a gun enthusiast, and I went and I got rid of it. Today it would have been a big trophy. Yeah.
So the gun's gone, but the paperwork remains, more evidence of what you did. What about coming home, back to the States? How did that unfold?
Well, finally, May, we decommissioned our ship. We took it in Norfolk, Virginia. We went through the Panama Canal home.
What was it like to get back to New York and to see your family again?
It was great. It was great. And then to get into certain schools, you had to wait. So I was discharged in May 1946. I went to Pace Institute in February of 47. Later on, it became Pace College, and now it's university, etc. And I went there. And I did 4 years in 39 months. I was like all the other sailors. We were all there. Our first class rooms were in the transportation building down in the low part of Manhattan. Now, one rule, they wanted us, it's an office building. We were on two or three floors and expanded. We had to wear a tie. So we all had a bow tie. We got to the, off the subway, on went to the bow tie. When the classes were through, we're out of the building, off came the bow tie. And I learned a lot in school, and I became a CPA, was with the firm that was with 50 years. And we sold our practice. I was a lead partner. And that was it.
How long have you been volunteering on the USS Intrepid, the museum ship, World War II aircraft carrier here in New York?
The war ended. Finally went to school. I finally got married. I had two children. I had an older son, Peter. This is Douglas. And I didn't think much about the war story films. From things occasionally I would watch it. I didn't think much about it. Now the war is over, I'm discharged after 50 years and everything. And I started telling a couple of stories about the war. And one story led to another story. I didn't think of it so many, many years later. Then we started to go to high schools. And one student got up and said he never knew there was a war. We were in Japan. All he knew was about the war in Europe. That's how they taught them. So my job, I find it exhilarating to tell some of these stories and some of these things and life that goes on in the military. And what went on, and we were a piece of baggage. The whole time we were in the service, we were told everything to do. Now, you get shore duty for a week. What do you think? Every sailor drinks beer. And for breakfast, that was life. But It's funny how I told you this individual I met on my ship. Before that, I was in California, and we went in, whatever, to go into a tavern. And there was a girl, waitress, who I went to school with. This is in California. Well, she became a very famous singer. But I knew her from school. But it's a small world.
So you mentioned going to speak at schools. And people from all over the world have met you on the aircraft carrier, the Intrepid, there. Why do you do that? Why is that so important to you?
Well, number one, it's exhilarating. And number two, while I'm alive, we'll try to pass on the gospel truth. They write different things. They leave everything out. This is my hands-on experience. Went to fifth grade school to teach some students. I'm talking about an honor flight, and I said, we went to an honor flight and came back, and they were greeting us and everything. And all of a sudden, the kid said, hey, I was on that group that greeted you. And the other side said, I was there too with my baseball team. Small world. They greeted us at the airport.
Well, and I was going to ask you about some of these adventures you've had in recent years, because I believe the tag you're wearing around your neck is from when you got to go to Pearl Harbor for the 80th anniversary with the Best Defense Foundation and our friend Donnie Edwards. And you told us about December 7th, 1941, and how you heard. What was it like to be there on that occasion 80 years later?
It brought back memories. Hundreds and hundreds of former service people there. Now, down comes in Pearl Harbor a ship, and on top deck is a crew dressed in whites. It brought back that memory of that funeral. We met the Secretary of the Navy with his wife, and we kept bunking into him in a number of places, and one place, Cooperstown, and he calls me out, and the whole place erupts. Thanking me. It was really something. All famous baseball players sitting in front of me, in the back of me, and everything. And here I am, a little me, and I'm the top dog.
I think I saw a picture of you and Johnny Bench and Joe Torre.
Yes, yes. And the plane we were coming from California, the stewardess came over to me. Would you permit Roger Staubach take a photo with you? We made an arrangement at this very airport where we would meet, and he had his wife and children, and he took pictures with him, me, and the family.
You must be doing something right. All these things keep lining up for you. And you mentioned the honor flight. So we've heard from a lot of veterans on this program who've been on the honor flight from all over the country. What was the experience like for you, and what were the elements of it that really stood out?
When I went to Washington, and they had displays, the Pacific Theater War, European War. My interest was in the Pacific Theater, and one of my grandchildren was going to college in Washington, and we had to meet us there in the airport. Now, I took him, and I pointed out, we were here, we were there, this is where we dropped bombs, etc., and everything. It brought back memories.
And I'm just curious, I'm always interested in this, when a World War II veteran goes there to the World War II Memorial, which was such a long time coming, which took $197 million of World War II veterans' money to build. You mentioned the European and Pacific, and there's the fountain, but behind that fountain, there's that wall of gold stars representing over 400,000 Americans, guys like you, who didn't get to come home. When you were looking at those stars, is there a thought or idea that went through your mind?
During the war, there were 16 million Americans who were in the military. As you mentioned, 400,000 were killed. 600,000 were wounded. You see these with artificial legs, etc. It brings back some bad memories of the war.
You told us some of the things you went through. Ships getting hit right next to you, kamikazes in the air. Did you ever feel like someone was protecting you?
No, I thought we all on my ship, we all were of the same mind. We were fearless, and nothing's going to happen to us.
couple more questions for you, and if there's anything I didn't ask you about, feel free to add. I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country and for telling us this story. Nobody else could tell us. When you think back of 98 years on this planet, is there something that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
The little mark that I made in this world and bringing up my children to respect the flag.
What do you think of when you look at the flag?
It brings back memories when I was in the service and constantly saluting. I don't think of the bad things.
And is there anything you haven't done in 98 years that you're still hoping to do, that you're looking forward to or thinking about?
I imagine there are plenty of things that to keep me going. Yes, yes. The latest is the Intrepid. We've set up with all kinds of pictures and things from my ship or from the archives, and they come over and I explain to them burial at sea, bombing, the kamikaze planes, etc. The funny thing is, on the Intrepid, there were more foreigners that stopped off and spoke with me and Douglas than Americans. Amazing. The Americans just passed by.
So if you ever catch Mr. Grabina aboard the USS Intrepid, you know what to do and you know what not to do. If you visit hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you can find a short video of him talking to visitors on that historic aircraft carrier. And wherever Arthur goes, his son Doug is by his side.
Most children never meet their hero. I'm extraordinarily blessed to have been raised, inspired, and unconditionally loved by my hero, World War II United States Navy veteran Arthur Grabina. Every day is Veterans Day. Every day is Father's Day.
I think that perspective is the perfect way to wrap up the show today, don't you? Thanks to Arthur and Doug Grabina, and also to American Airlines for providing us a nice quiet room at New York's LaGuardia Airport for us to record this interview. And thank you for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.